Hey, what's up, folks? So today on the podcast, we have Erin Farmer. She goes by Erin Lee DPT on Instagram. She is a friend from some OG CrossFit days. She started two affiliates, one in New Jersey and then one in Philadelphia, CrossFit Center City, and ran that for just about a decade before selling it to focus on going back to school to become a physical therapist. And that is what she does now. She focuses mostly on women's health and specifically pelvic floor health, which does apply to both women and men, as we will discuss in the podcast. And so this is a podcast where we caught up on things from over the years, and then also discussed a number of topics as it relates to women's health, pregnancy, postpartum, and pelvic floor health. So if you are interested in any of those topics, stick around. I know you'll enjoy this episode immensely. She is based out of Philadelphia and does see patients. So if you are interested in her services, you can certainly reach out to her. Just go find her on Instagram, Erin Lee DPT on Instagram. Enjoy the show.
Yes. Okay. So what do you want to, what are we going to?
Maybe just for people who are listening and don't know who you are.
Okay.
Why don't you give like an elevator pitch as to who you are.
Okay.
And then I have a couple of paths we can go down. You mostly chronological.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm down for anything. You just let me know. Cool. So my name is Erin Farmer, and that when I first started CrossFit was Erin Davidson, and I started CrossFit in 2007, way back when, and heavily influenced by a friend of mine, basically ended up starting an affiliate in New Jersey before I started an affiliate in Philadelphia. Left the one in New Jersey because I moved to Philly, and owned and operated that one for a decade. And that one was CrossFit Center City, which was more or less based around 13th and Chestnut. The first space was entirely main site programming. So for people who don't know, it used to just be CrossFit.com.
Yeah,
you type it into your computer. Mm-hmm. And then you would be like, okay, what weird thing am I doing today? And it would say something mysterious like 5x5 back squat. And that would be all you would do. Wow. So we started, my friend who influenced me into CrossFit in the first place anyway, and I started the gym. And we found this space that makes absolutely no sense now, but it had like tile flooring, short ceilings, cinder block walls, and we fabricated like 4 pull-up bar spots.
Yeah, because there's no rogue.
Yeah.
There's no
There's People don't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You wanted to have a pull-up bar. You had to make that yourself.
You had to get galvanized pipe.
Yes. With some strange man at Home Depot who was like, who was this really strange person who wants to pull a pull-up bar.
Yep.
So we did that, and then we did everything with sandbags. Which I feel like when I say it now is crazy. We had 1,000 pounds of sand, and we had 10 sandbags, I think. And then we had eventually had like 1 squat rack and I think 1 barbell. That was how we started. And we had small classes.
That's,
you know,
so
we
functional
had like 5 to, it really was. Yeah. And we had 5 to 7 people in a class. That's kind of how it started. And we were next to 12th Street Gym in Center City, Philly, which is like an institution that has since been torn down, which makes me feel really old. Mm. But it was epic. And the people that joined at that time, I mean, think about the type of person that's going to be like, sandbag workouts, somebody posts them online, you have to run down a series of stairs to get to outside to do your runs. Sign me up. That's like a really fascinating person, you know? So some of those people are still my closest friends, mm-hmm. or people that led me through the next phase of my journey, which basically was the gym grew. It became amazing. We did so many things. We had strongman competitions on streets that we rented in the middle of Philadelphia. We ran we had a barbell club, which is called Liberty Barbell Club, which ended up running meets that had Olympians at them. Like, just, there's so many incredible things that we got to do. There was a nonprofit that eventually ended up being started out of that space as well. But I sold the gym in order to fulfill a dream that I had before owning the gym, which was going back to school to become a physical therapist. Hmm. And the real reason for that, probably a little bit surrounded like family goals and things like that, but I love fitness, but I also am like weirdly attracted to fixing problems that have to do with, you know, any kind of movement. And I think to a certain extent that is the wheelhouse of a coach, but I also think that for the most part, I just could not live without knowing more. And so I went to PT school, did a lot of really cool things there, and then got out of PT school and worked in a conventional PT practice until I mean, it did not take long until I was like, this is terrible. Mm. Just like a real like turnstile, like, you know, everyone's really doing their best, but it's just the model is just not, it's not it. Yeah. And really just had the good fortune of being able to have the space and time to start my own private practice. And that's what I do right now, with the majority of my patients being, I'd say I probably right now I have like a 50% split of people who are pelvic health oriented, mm-hmm. and orthopedics on the other side. I also do remote coaching because I think that's a really good outgrowth of what PTs do. But I kind of
to clarify, that's for fitness.
Yeah, so for fitness, I still do a little bit of weightlifting oriented coaching, which is just like a passion project. I love weightlifting, mm-hmm. But it's for all different types of clients, and it's a lot of fun. I do miss coaching, whether it's like big classes or workshops or whatever. Mm-hmm. And all of that is really based out of just recently moving to Open Box Athletics, which is at 19th and Washington in Philly. Mm-hmm. And they've been great and super courteous, and I love it there. And so that's my non-elevator, like if we're taking a really long elevator ride, that's
the
speech. It's
the Burj in, yeah. You know. Abu Dhabi, or wherever it is. It's a big elevator.
It's a lot to say because it's been a lot of things. But yeah, so that's how I got here and what I'm up to.
What did you do for undergrad?
So that's such a good question for all affiliate owners, I feel like. So my undergrad, I was an English language and lit major, a biblical studies major, and I also had a minor in youth ministries.
That's such a cross-eyed answer.
Yeah.
It's everyone's expecting like kinesiology, yeah. and exercise science.
Yes. Mm-mm. Yes.
English.
And the way that eventually became sort of a thing was I always thought I was bad at science, to be honest. It was just sort of like a category I had put myself in when I was younger. But when I went to Gordon College up in Boston, and my senior year, I took a bio class that was required, and I did really well, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. And so then I ended up doing post-bac pre-med stuff at Harvard because it was close, and I was like, well, what am I going to do with these degrees? Mm. I have no idea. So that was the beginning of the, like, I want to be in medicine. I want to be something along those lines.
Gotcha.
And then a big loop.
Okay, so it wasn't going into undergrad that you were on that
no.
coaching, PT, that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I was more of a, I don't know what I'm going to do, but let's hope it's something that helps someone. That's like really where my head was at at the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're in good company. Greg Everett. Catalyst Athletics.
English, right? I thought that was what it was too. Yeah.
So
I feel like that's why I always love his posts. They're nice and organized.
Yeah, I agree. That's what attracted me to him. Yeah. Plus, he's just freaking funny.
Oh, he's great. Yeah, he's hilarious.
Well, I think, you know, if you can clarify your message, if you're articulate, if you're, you know, someone who can, because English, I mean, it's not saying that you want to be reading all day as a profession.
Right.
It's, you know, absorbing information. It's regurgitating it in a way that other people understand.
Yeah, teaching.
It's teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's this really cool collective of basically like older female business owners. I really don't know. It's such a weird category that I meet with in Philly, and it happens every like month or so. And the way that they introduce everybody who ends up coming, because it's different people all the time, mm-hmm. is you're supposed to say who you are without your profession.
Mm.
So you say, it's really difficult. But one of the ways that I always introduce myself, one of them, there's a couple little pockets, but one of them is always to say that I feel like I've always been a teacher.
Mm.
And yeah, so I feel like maybe the English thing kind of comes along with that. Yeah. Disseminating information.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's backtrack to Center City. How long was that decision percolating in terms of selling? Was the purpose of selling to so that you could focus on PT school?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were a lot of things. I think to be candid, it had been a long time of being in the business of gym ownership, and one of the things I'm hopeful for in this current venture is I feel like I am now better able to understand my limits. Whereas before it would have just been like, just pile it all on. Let's surpass every single thing we've got. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like at that point I was pretty burnt out. And,
gotcha.
I had known that for a couple years before I sold. And I had also known that I needed to get the gym to the point where it was sellable from the perspective of being a model that could easily be taken over by whoever was gonna buy it.
Right.
And so that took some time. And then in addition to that, it was also the drive to go to PT school because I realized that my work was always going to feel just a little bit not quite what I wanted to be doing. And then at the time, just wanting to start a family was a whole thing. And it's interesting because if I had stayed in the gym, I'm pretty sure that having a kid would have worked out just fine. But I would not have been able to find a way to do PT school because I was even doing prereqs while I was owning the gym and figuring all this stuff out. And that alone was like, well, oh my gosh, my brain is exploding.
Yeah.
So
you're saying things looking back, you can always make it work in your head.
Yeah.
But it does sound like, you know, preparing to have the business be sellable.
Yes.
Doing your prereqs, getting that already, and then at some point, we had two kids.
Yep.
But they came at a time where it made more sense than if trying to juggle, let's say, all three at once.
Yeah, I think so. Although, you know, having babies at any point in time is basically just a riot.
Yeah.
Like, it just wrecks your, and it's beautiful, but also wrecks your whole life.
Yeah, it's controlled and uncontrolled chaos.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. So... But yeah, that I would say that's an accurate read on how that all went down.
Cool.
But yeah.
Okay. PT school, you went in, did you know that you wanted to work, you know, pelvic floor, prenatal, postpartum, that population? Is that something that
that's
you went in with a focus?
That's an interesting question. So I actually, when I first went to PT school, my main focus, the thing that I loved the most was actually neuro. So... Working with people who have had traumatic brain injury, stroke, you name it. Like anything that had to do with nerves, brains, all the things.
Yeah.
I had a good friend who was a neurologic PT, and I had shadowed her a bunch. And in neuro PT, I think one of the really cool things is there's just this huge emphasis on how you learn. And PTs in general do learn that, but I think especially in neuro, because you have so many different limitations that you're working with and because you often get people who are broken way down to the bare minimum, it's just fascinating. So that was going into PT school, the only thing that I was like, I definitely am interested in this. I weirdly, when I first started, was like, I don't think I would ever want to work like sports ortho. Like, that's not. And yeah, that didn't last too long. Yeah, because I think I just realized, like, I don't know, I'm just kind of interested in all of it. And I got so lucky with my clinical rotations. My first clinical rotation, I did CHOP. I was at CHOP for sports peds, which was an incredible learning opportunity. I also ended up at a rotation for sports again at like a more typical clinic, but working with someone who specialized with dancers, which is very much out my wheelhouse. That's not a thing, but perfect because I don't know anything about it.
Right.
And then I did a rotation at our neuro rehab clinic in New Jersey, which was, I mean, everything I had ever wanted. It was like literally the full spectrum of people going through all kinds of things. And then just you get to bring intensity to them in any way. And I think one of my favorite things is that everything came together. You know, like there were times where when I would be working with someone who had some sort of neurologic problem, I would be thinking of like CrossFit principles for loading, right? Mm-hmm. Or I would be thinking of little things that I had learned from English and even biblical studies, like just like psychologically and socially understanding people. There's just so much that goes into treating. And so yeah, so when I started PT school, those were the levels of focus that I had. And then I, of course, I started PT school when my first son was 3 months. And that was intense. I have a longstanding history of back pain, and it's seen a lot of ebb and flow, and finally it's like got to the point where I do feel like I have a grasp on it. But during PT school, with all the stress and the moving and the baby, it was all over the place. I also ended up taking the boards while 36 weeks pregnant with my second.
Gosh.
Yeah, so pelvic health was a part of my life, whether or not I wanted it to be.
You were living it.
Yes, because I was living it. And I had a great pelvic floor therapist myself, which any experience I'm having, I'm learning. That's just how it is. And I learned so much from her. And that was really the beginning. And then I discovered kind of as I was going through PT school that it was, first of all, something that I was passionate about, but then also something that people just do not know about. And I do think it's starting to gain some traction. But even in medical communities, I mean, we did these like cross-discipline events in PT school where we'd like work with PAs and things like that. And people have no idea that there is a therapy for this thing, and that so many problems that people who have just given birth are having are oriented to something that could be muscular, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or coordination based. Like it's just the only thing they've got is creams. So
yeah, or Kegels.
Yeah, or Kegels. Yeah. And so it's just, I think I got into pelvic health because I recognized my need and then just this big gap in what goes on in the medical community in general. So yeah, I cool. love it so much. It's been fun.
That's a great entry to a big reason why I wanted to catch up with you.
Yeah.
Because the way I see it, podcasts are great to get information like that out there for people who may need it, may need the information. And I like podcasts because it's like evergreen information. So like even a year from now, someone's like searching for something.
Oh,
they
yeah.
can find this topic, right? So,
yeah.
So what would you want people, like either because you already work with them on your current clients or like what kind of, or even if you had like a big billboard out there, like what would you want people to know? Maybe let's start general, then we can get specific about pelvic health, or you can, you can be as broad or specific as you want about that. But like, what would you want people to know that you think the majority of people out there do not know?
Okay. I think the majority, like the number one thing I would say is, a lot of people are starting to know that pelvic health exists as a subspecialty for PT, but I it is not current practice. It is not standard of care for a provider, for an OB, for instance, or a gyn, to prescribe it. So if you are pregnant, it is my opinion that at some point you should have an appointment with a pelvic floor therapist just to check in and to make sure that you know how to use your pelvic floor, that you do not have any pre-existing conditions, any issues with incontinence or pain with sex or any of that stuff. And this is really so that basically so that I would like for my patients to not come to me in the way that they typically do, which is they had no prep. Some of them did not even take a birth class, which I think is really interesting. And then they deliver. And in 6 to 8 weeks, they'll go back for their first visit. They're cleared for sexual activity. They're cleared for lifting or whatever. And they've had severe tearing or a cesarean, or they have pain, and they're kind of just told, like, that's normal, you'll get over it with time, go lift your baby that's now going to become huge, and also your hormones are insane, like, you're on your own, figure it out, like, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck, more or less. And I think I know that there is a huge problem with how that is going. The biggest thing is, unfortunately, because it's not standard of care, you have to be an advocate for yourself if you are a birthing human. And so I would love everyone to know that the actual standard of care should be, prior to you having a baby, I am positive that at some point you're going to be like, huh, that hurts a little bit. You should probably just go see a PT before anything happens, at least once, and then afterwards, schedule your visit. Schedule your visit before you even have your baby so that you have one on deck. The issue is you will have to ask your provider. I've never had a provider say no. I see people who are OBGYNs and they are advocates for this. But you do have to ask because it's not current standard of care. Yeah. And insurance has issues with that sometimes, so they can't just willy-nilly be giving things out. But if you think about it, you see your dentist 2 times a year, but you don't ever see your PT until you're hurt. And I don't even have to get into the issues with, like, carrying basically a bowling ball for 9 months and how that's weird that nobody thinks that that needs a little bit more love from a physical standpoint. So I think that's, like, the number one thing is you do have to ask at this point.
What's the timeline on that? First trimester, second trimester?
I would say, like, honestly, even before you get pregnant, because we're probably not going to do an internal pelvic exam in the first trimester just as an extra point of precaution. Second trimester, you can definitely do that. And third trimester, it depends, but usually is okay. Birth prep is totally a thing that pelvic health PTs do. That usually happens in the third trimester. But literally, as soon as you are thinking about getting pregnant, I think that's when you should go, just to check in to make sure everything's working properly. Now, if you're not a pregnant individual at all and you do have any kind of symptoms, I think the problem there is that most people don't know what merits symptoms, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not normal to be feeling like you have to pee when you're doing things like double unders or box jumps or running.
Super common.
Yeah, very common in the CrossFit community. We always talk about, things are very common, but they're not normal. And that's the name of the game in pelvic health. Like, that's just what it is. It's not normal to have to just in case pee all the time. It's not normal to have to pee more than one time a night. 0 to 1 is the norm. And like every 2 to 4 hours is the norm during the day. If you're going any more than that, that's not normal. It's not normal to have pain with sex. It's not normal to have any kind of pelvic pain. I feel like the odd thing is that, people just living with pain. They're just living with pain.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's Well, because it happens with things like knee pain too. I think it's just we get told that it's normal, and there's often this message too of like things being connected to aging. I've had a lot of patients who are in their 30s, which is not old, who will be like, is it normal to just wake up and my whole body hurts? And I'm like, no, I don't think that's a function of age. I think that might be something else, you know? And yeah, so I think we get busy, we don't think it matters. And it's unfortunate, but it's the way that most decisions get made in life is until something is really screaming at us, we don't.
Yeah. Until something's acute.
Exactly. Yeah. We don't stop to look at it. So, but yeah, I would say that those are like the biggest things that
so
I would want people to know.
Talking with a PT, well, first of all, how would someone go about finding, should they be looking for pelvic floor PT, mm-hmm. do pelvic floor OTs, are they in that same bunch?
Yeah.
And then when they're going, mm-hmm. what kinds of questions would you want them to be asking to kind of filter through, okay,
yeah.
like this person, you know, is more general or this
what
person
makes,
is...
What makes a good pelvic health PT? So pelvic health PT is its own thing. There's no equivalent in OT, which is interesting. So the way that you would find one, I would hope, is actually when you go to your annual for your OBGYN.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're there and you're willing to ask, I would start there. There's a lot, there's like a huge presence online of all these different types of people now, which is great. But best thing is just go there, see where they send you. You can ask your friends because sometimes they will know through experience who they like. Once you're there, I will say there is a wide range of experience because the specialty is, it's not new, but it is becoming more well known. So there's definitely been more of an influx in patients. But the way that you will know if your pelvic health practitioner is is starting you out okay, honestly, there should be some kind of questions that are directed to you about everything, not just get in here, let's do an internal pelvic health exam. I actually usually try, unless there's some sort of a very acute issue, not to do an internal pelvic exam on my first visit with anybody. As you might imagine, it's not the same thing as me rehabbing a knee, right? So if I touch your knee the first time I meet you,
it's a little more invasive.
It's a little more invasive. Yeah. And I think most people who are symptomatic when it comes to pelvic health anyway are people that are dealing with some level of anxiety for whatever reason. And so kind of just coming into the clinic with that in mind is vital. And so most pelvic health practitioners that are doing really well are going to have a very trauma-informed approach to what they're doing. So they will ask for your permission to do lots of different things, and it might get annoying at some point if you don't really care, but it is important. The other big thing is if your pelvic health PT only ever talks to you about your range of motion for pelvic floor while you're on your back, so just like here we are supine, we're doing these exercises where you're learning to strengthen and lift and then breathe and relax. Those are all really good parts of the puzzle, but they are not actually the whole. And so if you're only ever on your back doing exercises in pelvic health, that's not the whole picture. You should be doing things standing. You should be doing things crawling, you know, all different positions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not, I would ask about that.
Right. Yeah, because supine position, it can be a way to eliminate certain hypotheses.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like a regular PT will get you on your back and look for hip flexion and hamstring, whatever.
Whatever, uh-huh.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. But we live in the real world.
Yeah. And most of people's symptoms, right, don't occur while they're on their back.
Right.
They occur doing really normal things, you know, like everything from bending over to pick your kid up to like, I went for a run, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to see all of those things. And your pelvic floor There's a lot of different models that people will use. People will talk about like a balloon and kind of thinking about your pelvic floor as a part of that pressure management. But one of my favorite analogies for the pelvic floor is that it's a trampoline. And that basically means that you need this kind of like pliability to everything that you do. And it's the reason why the pelvic floor will get challenged with variation. So running, but jumping, but then all of a sudden sneezing, or like all of a sudden having to like balance on one leg and then reaching for something. Yeah, so everything needs to be played out into actual function and what you really want to do, which is also a very CrossFit concept, right? Like if it's not going to apply to real life, then why are we doing it? So I've always loved that like pairing.
So, okay, they find someone they like. They're good with that. Should they be doing anything prenatal, you know, before giving birth? Is that a recommendation from you to say, hey, here are some breathing exercises you should be doing to prepare? Is there a consideration for what kinds of exercise they might be doing already or lack of? Is there anything that...
Absolutely. So this is like my current project right now in my own practice. It's all very like new, and so I'm still figuring things out. But one of the other little beefs I have with pelvic health is, and it's not really a beef, it's just like I've realized that this is not serving women as or people who are birthing as much as it could be, which is there's this huge emphasis on birth prep, right? And that's lovely because, Chris, I don't think you've ever pushed a baby out of you, but it's a wild experience, you know? There are certainly ways that you could learn to tap into your motor control for your pelvic floor that would allow you to feel more cognizant of the process. That said, birth is wild territory. And especially in this country where most people are birthing in a hospital system, there's, with a high rate of cesarean, there's only so much that you can ask a patient to do in that scenario. Mm-hmm. You can tell them like, okay, so maybe your nurse will be the good nurse and they'll come in and they'll change your positions a bunch of times. Maybe you'll get the midwife who is totally into letting you labor longer. But there's no way across the board that you're going to be able to do that. You can't choose who you birth with, okay? It's just not an option. You can choose what practice you might be in, but you can't choose who you birth with. So I have no issue with birth prep. I think it can be really important. Women and other people who are birthing are more attracted to that, I think, because there can be these really good benefits. Things like maybe rates of tearing are less, or maybe rates of cesarean, if that's something that you're interested in, are less. If you are someone who has learned to sort of relax and drop your pelvic floor more effectively, or understand that your tissues need longer to adapt in labor, great. But most of the time, you're going to go through something insane and beautiful, and then you're going to have this little baby, and sometimes two of them, and you're going to get on the other side, and you're going to have to lift this being, care for this being, breastfeed this being, figure out your own body, which will feel like an alien to you, manage hormones and everything that comes with that, which is completely out of your control for the most part, right? So something that I'm just way more of an advocate for is I would love for people who are birthing, this is a CrossFit community sort of oriented thing, but if you are not lifting, you need to lift. It is not an option for you to be a parent and not be strong. Sorry. Like, the rates of injury post-birth are very high, and a very big reason for that is not just the gap in the care, but also the fact that most people are not strong enough. They're not strong enough for life. And they're not strong enough to carry around a kid. Baby wearing is great, but you know, when's the last time that like some 20-something-year-old human who's about to give birth just walked around for 4 hours with a watermelon strapped to their front, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's my biggest thing is like, that needs to be the baseline. It's funny because the standard used to be, okay, you're pregnant, don't lift anything more than 15 pounds. Hilarious, right? Because mm-hmm. what people yeah. give birth to 10 pound easy. Babies.
Take it easy.
Yeah, take it easy. You're about to be carrying a baby all the time.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I think strengthening is not like a suggestion. It is the bare minimum. And you just need to be doing all of those things. Another thing that I think is equally vital is sort of getting your bearings as far as what is provided for you. Lactation consultation is basically, because of the Affordable Care Act, now a thing. Your insurance, for the most part, should cover that. And that's a huge mental burden for someone who is thinking about breastfeeding. Pelvic floor, getting that set up before anything else happens. I mean, your body is gonna hurt. Like, there can be nothing bad that could come from you going to see a PT, even if the PT is like, your pelvic floor looks really great. And you're just sitting there hobbling around with like basically a broken back and you're exhausted. There's nothing wrong with you just going to a PT because life will be really hard then. And then the other thing is even just something as simple as like knowing how to pick up your kid, put the kid in the crib. There's this crazy stuff that can happen with your hand strength even like after you give birth. You can develop nutty things with your ankle that are specific to birth. Like, it's just being able to anticipate any of that stuff by doing some strengthening and having an appointment set up so that you can just make sure you're okay is, I think, vital. And then the last little piece is just postpartum depression. As a component of what happens to most women and other people who are birthing, but it is usually women, I just a couple weeks ago, I had put out this big call for resources. I wanted resources on birth prep, on doulas, like any of that stuff in Philadelphia. But I had also asked people, what are some ways that you chose to support your mental health? And I mean, it'd be lovely if everybody could have a virtual therapist. That would be incredible, right? But people can't afford that, right? And people who've just had a baby have difficulty getting to appointments, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. You gotta get childcare or you gotta take your baby with you. Physically, that's very demanding. So I had one of the responses that I got was from somebody who was like, yeah, I went to my gyn afterwards for my visit and said, I'm having like these really disturbing thoughts and I don't know what to do and was told that I should just sleep more.
Oh, geez.
It's just baffling, you know, that's not an option. That's not an option. And it's incredibly isolating to feel like in the one place where you are allowed to ask for help, you're not even being given real options, right? Or education, right? Like maybe you didn't need a solution, but you needed to know that you were not alone and that this was common and that it would not last and that maybe the prognosis was different. Yeah, some empathy. Yeah. So I'd love your thoughts on that if you have anything to say about that. But yeah, I'm really curious about what would be, if we were living in an ideal world, what would be the best thing that we could do for people who are postpartum when it comes to mental health? How could we better support that? And really with a graded system, because my goal is to put together all of these resources and anytime I get a pregnant patient, just be able to say like, here you go, here's mm-hmm. some options, here's some things to expect, plan for that, you know, like even just postpartum psychosis. It's mm-hmm. like a 1 in 1,000 chance that people get it. But if that's you, that's like terrifying. And I think birth prep is great, but that's like none of these things, you know?
What's the timeline on, let's say, the PT seeing after birth?
So there can be exceptions to this. You can see a PT, especially if you are in real pain prior to your 6-week visit. But if you're gonna do that, you will need a script and just like an appointment. And that will typically happen, for instance, like if you, if you're having some trouble with wound healing and you call your gyn and you just say this is an issue, they will usually just write you a script right off. But typically at least by 6 weeks, that's another gap in what needs to be done, because in birth prep, right? Birth prep is great, prepare people for birth. I will usually give people, like, after you have given birth, these are the stretches that you already should be doing, or these are the breathing exercises, these are the stabilization exercises. Not because I want them to have like one more thing on their list, mm-hmm. but because I know it's gonna be an issue. And for surgeries, like an ACL reconstruction, within 2 days, that person is back in the clinic and is being given ice, rehab, mobilizations, all different kinds of things, compression. For when you get the middle cut out of you for a cesarean, you're just sent home to care for your kid and to heal on your own. It's comical, you know. It should not be that way. So I usually just say, you know, you can't probably come see me. That's a little more complicated. But after birth, these are some of the things that you could be doing just to preventatively help yourself along. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the goal, is to make that the standard, but it's not.
And then what's your when they ask, okay, well, and even the folks that are seeing you are filtering themselves to be in a group that's very much the minority in terms of people who are self-advocating and or even have the ability to self-advocate for themselves and be educated on this, right?
Yeah.
So take that with a grain of salt. But, you know, for maybe to the message of the folks who are like, I need to get back to Orange Theory, or I need to get back to CrossFit or whatever, like as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And maybe even they're waiting for that, you mm-hmm. know, 12-week mm-hmm. you know, doctor kind of release, right?
There's a wide range of who recovers, how quickly. There's so many different reasons. You know, you think of these like elite CrossFitters, right? Who will like have a baby and then it's like 10 weeks later, they're walking around, their abs are right there.
Yep.
I don't have any issue with that, because that is that person's journey. And honestly, some people are just built to recover better than others.
Right.
Some people,
they're probably professional athletes for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. They are already proving their resilience like throughout their whole life, right?
Right.
Also, higher strength levels at a baseline, it's just going to mean that you have an easier time, you know? Mm-hmm. Again, that's an argument for strengthening. Mm-hmm. But you can also have... this is one of the current cases that I'm dealing with, is somebody who had not been doing any activity, was just like a really just nice person who just walks for their fitness, had a baby. It was pretty traumatic. The delivery was really quick. And when she first came to see me, she was unable to like lift her leg like at all. Like she could, like lying on a table, she can't wiggle it, she can't move it in and out, she can't pull her knee to her chest. She can't do any of that due to pain, but also due to nerve damage, because she was just like, I can't make that thing move. And like that person does not need to be thinking, 10 weeks, I'll be back outside, you know?
Yep.
The timeline is going to be different for everybody. There are certainly things that you can do to make your timeline better, but I think that it's very important to say, for most women, again, going back to the ACL reconstruction, one ligament taken out of your knee, made into something different, right? That recovery, depending on who you see, can take anywhere from 6 months to at least a year, but it's recommended that you're not back to doing anything athletic for a year. It should be that way for when you have a kid. There are general recommendations on when to get pregnant again. And I believe the official recommendation is 18 months between kids, which checks out, because most of the people that I see, they really don't feel fully back to themselves. I mean, ever, but really even able to sort of start to make some decisions for themselves athletically until 18 months postpartum. So it's a wide variety of what's going on. But generally knowing 6 to 8 weeks, that's how long tissues take to heal no matter what. Tensile strength of tissues at like a microscopic level, right? That's not back until 12 weeks. So if you think you're going to be running out the gate at 6 to 8 weeks, maybe you're a genetic anomaly and that's great. But I would say that's high risk behavior. And if you can do it, if you can hack it, that's fine. But I would not want anybody to be putting pressure on themselves to be beating that timeline. Not to mention the fact that so many things are happening that mean that your recovery is just going to be crappy. You know, you're not sleeping. You're giving all of your everything to somebody else.
Yeah, all your nutrients are going out.
Yeah, all your nutrients are going out.
You're probably not eating enough.
Oh, yeah. And there'd be all kinds of issues.
You're not getting the sleep.
You can't anticipate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the baby's sleep will change. So every time, you remember, every time you're like, oh, this is totally, we're in a groove. We're in a groove. Yeah. No, we're not in a groove. It's a lie. It's all a lie. So I do think there's plenty of people can be doing, but I also think it's important to be really gracious with yourself and let your body tell you what the timeline is.
Yeah, I tell our new moms, especially if it's their first, expectation-wise, obviously everyone's gonna be different, but expectation for fitness, 9 months in or whatever that is, 9 months out.
Like, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Expectation.
Great. Yeah.
It's not to say you can't start your fitness back up.
Oh yeah.
But like, don't expect to be back to any sort of weights you were doing before or intensity.
Yeah.
Like, just move if your body allows it.
Yeah.
Go for walks when your body allows it.
Yeah.
And have no expectation to be back to where I was. And I use those quotes because that's kind of their thought process.
Exactly.
At least until however long you were pregnant.
Yeah.
Past.
And I think one of the things that's been more empowering for me, I think, as a provider is having had kids, I now have this experience. Both of my deliveries were emergency cesareans after like vaginal labor, which is super fun. But I've had this experience that a lot of my patients will express to me, which is like after you have a kid, no matter how athletic you were to begin with, there's just this bizarre feeling of just like being empty and not really like you're just like a series of arms sitting on top of legs, just like wobbling around. And I remember the first athlete that I coached that had had a baby and been like very athletic. And I remember her kind of just like breaking down the first time she came back into the gym because she was like, I can't even like roll myself up to like get off the ground. And again, that's an argument for preparing people, not for like the worst, but just like this is pretty much the norm is that you're going to have to recreate some of these connections and your motor control will be lacking. If people have never felt that, it can feel like, you know, you're broken. You have had a stroke or something. You can't make your foot move when you're looking at it. You know, like it's a bizarre feeling. But I do think that that's a great start is just providing women with the perception like 9 months in, 9 months out.
Just setting expectations.
Yeah.
To not be, and also not feel like they're failing or behind if things do take longer.
Yes.
Because I think, especially with some things on social media or whatnot, or even just their own expectations or kind of comparison trap of like, oh, I'm behind or I'm not recovering the way this person I see on social is or whatever.
Right. And even to the like the more specific extent of like thinking of the PRs and the records that you had before and not losing them. You're going to keep them in mind even if I tell you to forget them. But thinking about this as your current journey and remaining devoted to the presentness of that. I think, so one of the other weird parts of my history is that for like the 3 years that I wasn't owning the gym, between PT school that I took, I was studying mindfulness meditation and then also teaching it a little bit. And I feel like that has been so perfect as a complement to my current practice because again, with the whole anxiety thing, but one of the central principles that comes from that field of thinking is this idea of maintaining an attitude of curiosity. And it's really lovely but hard to do. You know, instead of thinking postpartum, here's the goal that I subject myself to, it's a really different perception to come into the gym and just think like, well, let me just be curious about where my abilities are, where I could be, whether it's your first kid or your fourth kid, like, who knows? Because every single version of you is going to be different. But curiosity will get you so much farther, I think, than this like gritted teeth attitude of mm-hmm. like chasing the thing that you want to demand from yourself.
Right.
Just a really different vibe.
Well, it's also like, and this is a maybe a tough message for some, but like those who have the mindset of like getting my body back.
Yeah.
It's not the same body.
It's not.
Like
it's
you
not.
Birth a human mm-hmm. or two or three or, you know, like.
Tissue stretched to lengths that are nuts.
It's just not the same. Yeah. Like, I mean, even using like a more, like a knee replacement or a hip replacement mm-hmm. analogy, like,
yeah,
it's just not the same.
You will never be the same.
And that's
same.
Okay.
You will be great. You will be able to do a lot of things that you wanted to do.
Right.
But it will never be the same.
Yeah. Or, you know, we don't recommend our pregos to go for maxes when they're pregnant. Mm-hmm. Because of the laxin and relaxin mm-hmm. And whatnot, but because their hormones are so all over the place, mm-hmm. they theoretically they could have the biggest PRs they've ever had in their life when they're pregnant.
Oh right? Yeah,
and we've seen it in the past plenty of times, especially old school, right? Like hitting crazy deadlifts and squats and all that.
Yeah.
So we don't recommend it here, mm-hmm. but understandably, they might have those numbers in mind and are like, man, like, I can hit that again.
Yeah.
I got to get back to that, but it's just...
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because how people are approaching training around pregnancy is... It's changed, you know? And I was never, for instance, one of those people who was like, I'm going to snatch around my belly until mm-hmm. week 38. Right. It just wasn't worth it to me. Because there was nothing in snatching in week 34 that I would be really missing, you mm-hmm. know, like if I didn't do it.
Well, you're changing motor patterns too.
Yeah.
If you're going around a belly.
I mean, get me started. That's a big concern that I have. But again, I love to champion movement. I'm not going to tell someone they can't do something unless it's really important that they don't.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that that's shifted a bit. Mm-hmm. But really, unfortunately, if you are somebody who's been able to lift at a very high level of your max and you're someone who's been lifting for a while and you don't get hurt throughout pregnancy, I mean, like, you should go buy a lottery ticket because you are a very lucky person. Those people exist. They really do. Sure. I mean, I've seen them and they're great. But the majority of people, unfortunately, see something like that, go do something that's probably not the best idea, right. Hurt themselves. Now right. You're pregnant. Now right. You're nauseous and you're hurt. And like, it's just not a great journey. But yeah, I hung on really long, pun intended, to pull-ups for all of my pregnancies. So just like really wanting to do pull-ups as long as I could. And the fateful day would come, you know, sometime in the week 30 something, where it just wouldn't be happening anymore. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, it's a little sad. It's a little bit like, okay, well, there goes that again. But I mean, your body is resilient. A lot can happen with time. But it is tough. I totally understand why people end up going a little nuts.
Right. I know the answer to this, but let's, you know, for our folks who, let's say their kids are more grown, they're not in their first year mm-hmm. of postpartum, but they're still having symptoms. Mm-hmm. We get plenty of ladies who run off to the bathroom before a double under workout.
I bet you can actually see it. Workout. Yeah, that's what I should do. I should post up on a double under day.
Yeah, it literally, I mean, it happens, right? Yeah. The just in case pees, right? Mm-hmm. So, what would your recommendation be for them? Should they see a PT?
Yeah.
Is it, basically, I think the question that some might have is like, is it too late to fix?
Or
I don't want to say fix like 100%, but work on.
Yeah, to get better.
Yeah.
It's a great question, because you're right. It's really a popular problem. So we like to say in the world of pelvic health that the postpartum period never ends.
Because you're always postpartum. Once you give birth.
And you're always affected by all of this. I mean, the other population that I see, it's like the cutest thing. If I'm not seeing people who are young, postpartum, or having some kind of pain with sex, that kind of situation, I'm seeing these people who are like in their 70s who are having issues with incontinence. And the lovely thing is, that's usually a pretty easy solution. But the reason that they will, I will always ask them about their births, even then, because it does matter. And so absolutely, you can seek out pelvic health at any stage of life for any problem. Often back pain of any kind is something that is tied into that. So just a hot tip for people that have had back pain for years. And the thing that I would be thinking, especially if this is like a lingering problem, especially if you're having incontinence issues, is again with that whole concept of making sure that you see somebody who's going to give you standing up pelvic health. Maybe not the first or second visit if you've got some pretty severe problems, but at some point someone's going to need to teach you how to move in a way that doesn't have this happen.
Gotcha. So that's going back to your point of, you know, not always being on the table.
Yeah. Not this like passive pelvic health. The other thing I should say, probably just as a general tip, is there's been this mass exodus of pelvic health providers from conventional PT practices. This is because maybe some of your listeners will know, but insurance models make it so that bigger PT companies can only profit if they are seeing upwards of two patients an hour. There used to be people in this general area who, providers who were committed to at least two patients an hour. So it's no more than that, right? And for pelvic health, the standard has always been one-on-one care for an hour. Unfortunately, that's not lucrative enough for some of these businesses. And this is the majority, I'm going to say. Like, this is every single PT practice that I know of that is a larger company right now. I left my company along with the entire pelvic health staff of that company, left the company because they changed the standard of care. They said, you need to see two patients an hour for pelvic health, which, frankly, someone comes in from having a baby, and they're gonna take a half hour to even tell you what happened because that's how it goes. Not to mention the fact that most people who are seeing us have been through some kind of trauma. Most people who are seeing us are gonna merit some kind of internal pelvic work somewhere along the way. And we used to joke, like, well, I don't know what we should do. One finger on each side, and then, like, you know, here's the screen in the middle. Like, I don't know how to make this okay, you know? And so the entire pelvic health community has, there's been this mass exodus from conventional PT care, which is really unfortunate because that's how people are going to get care. But they've moved into this cash pay model, which I should mention can be really daunting from the perspective of the patient, but I would encourage patients to seek out cash-based PTs. Cash-based PTs are cash-based PTs because they know that they can get better results and because they're going to give you an hour of their time. Mm-hmm. You will never be in there with three other people lying on a mat doing your same old exercises for the next like 12 weeks. It is abominable, you know, that's mm-hmm. basically what PT has become in some places. But so I got really excited about that. But it is, I think that's like a good place to start if you're thinking, if your problems haven't been resolved, you've been to pelvic health care before or something like that, I would not stop with just one provider because there are a lot of people who are not informed, I think, properly in the way that you can actually treat a lot of these issues with more than just internal care.
Yeah. I know it's going to vary person to person, but what are some ballpark lengths of engagement? How often are you seeing someone?
That's a good
weekly? How much homework do they have versus in person? And then, you know, how many weeks slash months? And I know that's totally different across the board depending on person's situation. But
no, but it's such a good question because that's one of the more encouraging parts of things, I think. Okay, so I'll try to break it down into a couple different examples. Like I said, anybody who's dealing with incontinence issues, especially that comes from something that's like, I just hear like running water and then I want to pee, that person, I will say, honestly, one or two visits. I've had it last longer.
I think that would be surprising to a lot of people.
That's what I'm saying. And it's like, how wonderful is that? I like one of the first patients I ever saw who was an older patient who was having all these issues. I literally saw her two times and she was floored. She was like, I cannot believe I've been living like this for so long. Yeah. She could not leave her house, you know, for fear of like wetting herself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's like one category of a person I would highly recommend reaching out. But the other category is I've had people who have had pain with sex who we've been able to resolve this in 1 to 2 visits. Hmm. Like I got really lucky. One of my first patients was like that and it was very deceiving. but I will say it's not that many visits. I don't have a lot of people who I think that takes more than 4 to 6 visits. And many of them can be less. And it obviously varies, like you said, and it depends. One of the other populations that we do tend to see a lot in pelvic health is chronic pain. Hmm. Because if your pelvic floor is off, it does affect literally every part of your body, right? It's going to make your knee hurt. It's going to make your toe feel weird. It's going to make your shoulders do a thing. So I will say that that is the population that is the longest. So those are the people that I actually really love to say, maybe you're going to need to come in for some hands-on manual stuff or one-on-one coaching. But my biggest goal with a person who has had chronic pain, at that point, your pain is no longer tissue-based. And this is a really hard concept to teach, but basically, 6 to 8 weeks, if something's torn, it's healed. It's fine, okay? So your issue now is that your brain has decided the initial acute phase of whatever went on with your pain, your brain turned an alarm on and left the alarm on. And nobody has gone in and just said, like, actually, this is fine, and turned the alarm off. So you still have this, like, blaring signal, right? The longer that goes on, the more that gets harder to break. And it's something called cortical like sensitization, basically. Mm-hmm. The same reason why, like, you know, if you were ever in a car accident and you had a really bad injury and every time you hear screeching tires, like all of a sudden your whole body gets flinchy and tight. It's the same thing. Those patients are the ones that take the longest. The best thing for them is maybe this like sometimes manual work, but then the coaching model is the reason that I love what I do, because they just need to move. They need to encounter their own resilience. They need to encounter their own fear. They need to build courage by literally doing the thing that scares them. It helps a lot doing that under the umbrella of PT, because it means that you always feel like, okay, well, if I have a minor freak out, or if maybe I do a new thing and my thumb feels weird, I'm not gonna die, you know? I'm here, I can have somebody who can just look at that and make sure I'm okay. So I do have patients who see me through an insurance model 2 times a week for mostly coaching, because what we're working on is that resilience, is returning to this feeling of being empowered to move in their own bodies and to know that they can heal themselves, right? So yeah, so those are the main, I think that those are generally the main categories, you know, and that's the timeline. It can be complicated, but if you've never been examined, I mean, I feel like most of the time in that first visit, someone can kind of give you a sense. First or second visit, you're going to know, like, how long is this really going to take us?
Yeah, I think I'm surprised by that, and I'm sure a lot of other people would be, that and again, everyone's situation is different, but mm-hmm. Some of those situations, some of those scenarios are really not that much.
Yeah, I know. And yeah. it's mind-blowing, but a little goes a long way.
Yeah.
And especially when you're seeing someone one-on-one, again, you can do a lot with an hour, you know?
For sure. That's what we say for our personal training clients.
Absolutely, yeah.
Hour's a long time.
Yeah, it's a really long time. And there's so much more that goes into that. You know, I think I put up, I'm doing a series of posts on basically just a case study of taking somebody from like birth and then all the way to recovery. And in the first visit even, I was like, I wrote it all out and I was just like, this is insane. We covered so many things and just like so many different pockets mm-hmm. of what this person needed. It's worth it, you know. It's definitely worth it, and that's my hope anyway, and my goal, you know, in any visit. But yeah,
that's cool. Is there anything? I'm sure there's so much that we could talk about, but is there anything pressing in your mind that, you know, really you would like to get out to the public? To, you know, what, anything that we haven't discussed that people should or you know be aware of?
I think my mind just drifts to the whole postpartum depression thing. Mm. Because I do know that it is being talked about more, but I feel like for the most part, people who are postpartum are scrambling, and it is really difficult to know what resources might be available. So I feel like that's probably, I mean, really, it's the number one thing is just recognizing that maybe things will go very easy for you and you will never have any problems with any of this, but the norm is, it's just very common to have a lot go on. When you couple that with pain, I mean, I've had people who come in and they're just like crying, you know, like they're crying, mm-hmm. they're in pain, they've got this like.
They've also had to go back to work.
Yeah, and then they have to go back to work. It's just a lot. And so I feel like I want to normalize talking about that. And I also want to say that this, I'm an advocate for PTs not being there to support your mental health, but every time you go to a visit with like a pediatric visit, you will typically get a little questionnaire that checks in with your health.
Yeah, screening.
Yeah. And this is now standard of practice, but that's at a physician's office where you're seen for maybe 20 minutes. Your PT sees you for an hour. That's so much time to be able to just care for someone. And kind of nodding back to the reference that I made about, you know, who you are without talking about your job title, I do think that who I am as a provider is a healer. And I take that very seriously. I think mental health care from an actual certified professional is vital if you can get it. But in the meantime, setting yourself up for success means postpartum, just anticipating some of this and calling your friends and speaking with your spouse ahead of time about what would be ideal. Not fair, ideal, because everyone's going to be stressed. I think it's just good to have those conversations before there's like a wonderful little being in the room who's demanding all of your attention mm-hmm. and puking all over you and pooping all over you. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's probably the biggest thing is that, you know, if you have any questions about this, get in touch with me. But I just want to normalize that and want to put that out there that, like, I think parents are doing hugely heroic work, but we don't want them to have to be, right? Like, it should be the norm to take care of yourself, whether it's pelvic health or just pain in general. We do not need to be living like this. And if you're not getting better, don't stay. good providers discharge people if they're not helping, right? Mm-hmm. If I see you for 6 visits and you're not better, I'm not the one for you. And there's a humility in that that I think is more needed in our community. So I feel like that's probably it. I don't know if I have any other big things.
What does it look like for you working with people? Are you going to them? Is it outpatient, inpatient? Or do you have an office that people go to?
So my current, so right now at OpenBox Athletics, I have this space that is up above the gym. Like you can hear the gym. It's like very loud, mm-hmm. and it's sort of semi-private. This is because I'm having like a legitimate office built next door. I will be in that office in December, which will be really great. But yeah, so what that looks like for me is I like to check in with people's mental health. I like to take my time in asking them how they are. I like to give people exercises that are perfect for them. Everything you need and nothing more. Minimum effective dose is something that I'm like obsessed with. Mm-hmm. I like to be checking in with people and kind of seeing what are your actual goals, which every PT should be asking you. And then are we getting there? Is this happening? You know, because if not, then why are you here? The goal of the space itself that is in my mind, because like I've said, I have this whole background in mindfulness. I can't really do it right now, but in my previous space, which was private, there were times where we ended either a coaching session or a session, an actual visit with meditation. And it sounds like, how's that gonna solve anything? But I'm telling you, these people, you get them quiet for 5 minutes and you just put them in a room and give them that, right? And and people come out of there like, that was the greatest thing. and it's so good to just remind people, like, you could come here for that. You could also get that for yourself. That refreshment and that feeling of coming home is always with you, you know? So big goal of the space that I'm creating is to come forward with that, to create a safe space. Still a work in progress, for sure, because right now there's just like, you know, System of a Down bumping in the background. So nothing against System of a Down, but it's like, it's a lot right now. So yeah. Really hopeful for what it will become, though.
Cool.
Yeah.
And if people want to get in touch with you.
So right now I'm very unofficial. I am, I'm Erin Lee, Erin, E-R-I-N-L-E-E, D-P-T. Doctor of Physical Therapy, Erin Lee DPT on Instagram. I have a lot of work to do on my website, so don't look too closely at that. But if you do have any questions, I'm happy to field any of that or just get to know you. Would love any of your help or ideas about resources, as I've kind of already talked about. You can DM me right there, and I'll usually see DMs before I see emails because email's insane. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Love it. So yeah. Erin Lee DPT on Instagram is the best way to get in touch.
Yes, please. Perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
So if you're listening and need to get in touch, go DM her.